Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. Before we start this week, I have an announcement to make. We're doing a 2025 Dirty Giants Big Shed contest. So kind of what that entails, you have to be wearing a piece of Dirty Giants gear. So we have the hats up on our website right now. Hopefully we'll have some shirts there soon as well. And there's going to be two categories, so biggest single and biggest set. The set, we're going to give a 20-inch inside spread credit to all of them just to kind of make it fair across the board. And to be entered in this, you have to be wearing a piece of Dirty Giants gear, so a hat or eventually a shirt. And those hats, like I said, are on our website right now. We're just going to do mule deer sheds only this year. You have to have picked up the shed or set this year, so the 2025 shed season. And that's kind of the biggest hang-up I've had with the shed contest, trying to figure out how to validate that. But I think through social media and stuff, we'll put the pictures of the biggest ones up for a while and just kind of vent it through social media, make sure that those sheds were in fact picked up this season. And then the top sheds, we're actually going to try to find a way to personally measure the sheds just to make it uniform and make sure the person with the biggest shed actually does win. And all those photos must be submitted by May 31st to be entered. And how you enter, you just find the shed, take a picture with your Dirty Giants hat on, and then you're going to send the picture to the email dirtygiantssheds@gmail.com. So the biggest set is going to get a free shoulder mount. The cape and everything is included from Strip Taxidermy. He's done all my deer mounts and he does an incredible job. It's crazy. They look so real. I love looking up at them and it just looks like how they looked right before I killed them. And then we're also going to get a free mini muley of the set. So I appreciate them doing that. That's a pretty cool thing. And then $250 to Art of the Hunt. You've heard me talk about them on the podcast before. They do some really, really cool stuff, kind of make a design of your buck, or in this case your sheds, and you can put it on a hat, shirt, phone case. They have all sorts of stuff. And then the biggest single is going to get the free mini muley of the shed, the $250 to Art of the Hunt as well. But then Antler Tech is going to do a clone of the shed. So what Antler Tech does is they mirror your actual shed and then make a replica. So it's like you have a set of the single shed that you have. It's super cool what they do. I don't know how they do it, but I'll post some videos up of some of the sheds they've done. It's pretty amazing. And then the random winner is going to get $100 to Art of the Hunt and then a free mini muley of their shed as well. So pretty cool stuff. I hope that gets you guys excited for the contest. I'm excited to see what's picked up, and I really do appreciate any of the support. If you guys can buy a hat or whatever, it helps me a lot. I put it all back into the podcast to get better sound, better gear, better stuff to try to make the podcast bigger and better. So I really appreciate it. I know that was kind of a long introduction, so let's go ahead and get into to this podcast.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We're going to do a little mini series almost, so we're still going to have the big episodes with the big buck stories, but I thought it'd be interesting to have just like a mini podcast, like 15 to 20 minutes, and just kind of do off-season preparations, because it's kind of the off-season now, the slow time of year, and I thought it'd be cool to kind of go through things and see what people are doing on their off-season preparation. Just something you can listen to at the gym real quick or commuting or wherever you are. So this week we have Hunter Larson, Rider Industries. We're going to go over a few things and try to learn from each other. So thanks for getting on, Hunter. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Glad to be here. We've been talking about this for a while now.
Yeah, actually, kind of how it sparked the idea. I was talking with Hunter, and man, he does a lot of stuff on the off season that I think the normal hunter doesn't do, and that's how he has so much success. He's always on big deer and big animals, and it just kind of opened my eyes to a few things. I'm not real versed with shooting and stuff, and then hearing him talk about it, I'm like, man, I need to be more proficient, and there's a lot to learn that I don't know. So we kind of had this idea together to start a mini series of what people are doing on the off season. So we thought about kind of talking about shooting and some of the stuff you do, Hunter.
Yeah, so like during the off season, everybody's kind of wore out. November, December come around and everybody's wore out. And then it's like everybody puts their gun or their bow down for the next 8 or 9 months, just waiting for the hunts to come around. People will pick their bow up in May or June once draw results come out. But a lot of people don't really pick up their guns a lot. They just think once their gun's on, their gun's on. Their gun might be on, but the most important thing is like knowing your equipment and how to use it. And whether it's for you, it definitely, if you know how to work your rifle or you are intimate with how rifles work and how the turrets work and understand mils and MOA, you can help, in my case, clients. When you're guiding, you can help fix problems in the field and re-zero the rifle or know how to come up with a correct BC or a feet per second without a chronograph when you're in the field. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's really important just because, I mean, those are precious seconds you save, just like you said, knowing your weapon and how things work. And if you can do a quick mathematical equation or know where you're hitting with this type of wind or know how your weapon works, that can save critical seconds, and that can be the difference between killing the buck of your dreams and not. So I'm excited to kind of talk to you about it. We talked about it a little yesterday and you made some really good points. So like, what are some of the things you do to get familiar with your weapon and feel confident with it?
So like, what I would say where you need to start is pull your gun out at least during the off season and check everything, make sure it's good. Go to your scope rings, retorque all your rings, torque everything. I really like to shoot about this time of year. We're getting into middle of January, February, March. And the reason I like shooting this time of year is because it simulates the seasons that you're going to be using a rifle, similar temperatures, similar conditions. It's starting to heat up outside, so it's starting to get windy. So shooting now is going to be shooting. It's going to simulate conditions just like when you're hunting in October, November, and December.
Right. That makes sense.
So, like, know how to use your biprod proficiently. Know how to use bags. There's very few hunters that use sandbags. Like, sandbag sounds heavy. They make really light-filled shooting bags, and they're only going to weigh a couple ounces, and you throw it in your pack. Whether I'm the one hunting with a rifle or a muzzleloader, or it's a client, there's always one or two bags that I carry in my pack. That might be a point that people need to start thinking of. That's a good rear support. You can put that behind the butt of your rifle, and or if you're limited on space and you can't get prone, you can rest one of those bags on a tree limb and take a very good supported shot off of a tree limb using a bag.
Okay.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense. I've always thought about it for the rear rest, but like even something that simple, like putting it in the tree instead of just directly on the tree limb, like that's something I didn't even think of. So just that right there could make a big difference.
Well, yeah, and that's going to segue into what I really do to prepare. But they make different shapes and sizes, all sorts. This is where the, like the PRS and the NRL, the PRS is Precision Rifle Series, and the NRL is National Rifle Series. That's where this kind of crosses over. You carrying those bags when you're out hunting and knowing how to use them, they make one that's called a fortune cookie. There's a whole bunch of brands. So if you can envision the bags flat on the bottom and then on the top on the left and the top on the right, it goes up and makes a U like a fortune cookie. Well,
okay.
If you're out in the field and you need to rest off of a tree branch, you put that fortune cookie upside down on the horizontal tree branch, and now you have almost like a bench. It's like 5 or 6 inches long that the fore end of your stock can rest on. And it gives you really good balance.
That makes sense.
Yep.
So you're using that in addition to like a rear support bag, which would that just be like, square?
Well, yeah. Square, rectangle. You can also use that as a rear support as well.
Okay.
But what I was getting at is they have this thing called the NRL 22. Everybody has a 22. This kind of sounds dumb, but it's the best practice you can do. So the NRL 22, they have 12 matches a year. They have it in every state has a match, if not three or four in different cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this crosses over into hunting is you can, it teaches you how to use your equipment in not good positions. So you generally shoot 100 to 120 rounds in a match. And it's all positional. Very rarely are you laying prone. So this teaches you how to use tree branches, use logs, use rocks, different things, and to get stable. So that's what I do in the off season. I shoot NRL 22. And the reason for it is it's the cheapest way to know your equipment. You can start with any 22. But I've built my 22 to simulate all of my hunting guns. So it's the same action, same chassis, same everything. And so it crosses over and you can get a lot of practice doing it. Like for example, my wife, she didn't shoot guns before she met me or didn't shoot guns with scopes. We went out a couple weeks ago, and Conley, I know you've seen it. You seem like a first-time shooter, like when they can't see through the scope. They move their head back and forth, up and down.
Right.
Well, and then they see black, and they're like, well, I think I can see it, but the crosshair's moving all over the place. That's because they don't have a good cheek weld or a good length of pole to be able to get a clear picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so even guys that hunt every single year, it's not a natural thing to them. You should be able to pull your rifle up with your eyes closed, and when you open your eyes, you should be able to have a clear sight picture without moving your head. So that's something people can practice, and that's you either need to adjust your length of pole with spacers on your stock, or you need to move your scope forward or backward to adjust for that.
That makes a lot of sense, and that's like something you don't really think about, but you're right. Like, even like I've helped my like little brother or cousins who are younger, and like that's the hardest thing for them is like actually finding the animal in the scope, because like you said, they're just not used to it. Like, some things I've done to help with that, too, is, like, I've even gone and shot, like, jackrabbits and stuff with my deer hunting rifle just to, like, practice, like, getting on them quick. Because, I mean, like, when they jump out, you have 3 seconds. And you, if you get them off, if you can get on a jackrabbit that quick, I mean, it makes when you're in the field, like, deer so much easier. And it's, like you said, just second nature. Like, you could almost do it with your eyes closed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If I had your kind of money, I'd be using a seven mag or a 7 PRC to shoot jackrabbits. But for us poor guys that want to shoot hundreds of...
That's not what I was saying.
If you want to shoot hundreds of rounds, this 22 thing is, it's awesome. You can, there's a lot of factory guns that have their precision 22s, Savage, Ruger, and CZ. You can just practice with just your regular 10-22 or whatever 22 you have. Mm-hmm. But just from going out, you can shoot 100 bullets and it's not bad. Going out, if you're trying to teach somebody shooting 100 bullets out of like a 6.5 Creedmoor or anything, it's a lot of shock to a first-time shooter, and it's expensive. So with with this 22 thing, you can, it really shows your imperfections with a 22. It doesn't kick at all. And so it will show on your trigger squeeze if the crosshairs are dancing after you pull the trigger. Like a lot of people, when they pull the trigger, they will break the trigger and their crosshair will go high right. And that means when they pull the trigger, they weren't coming straight back on the trigger. That's why it goes to the right if you're a right-handed shooter. If the crosshairs go up and to the right, that means you didn't have a good rear support. And so with the 22, you can actually watch your impact. And then a lot of times you have a good enough scope, you can actually watch the bullet go through the air. And so that shows you a lot of your imperfections using a 22. But back to the story of my wife. We went out a couple weeks ago. She shot my competition 22. And to shoot 10 shots took her like 15 minutes to get a clear scope picture and get it all figured out. We went out one more time. 10 shots took her a couple minutes to do. And then we went out yesterday and she got down on the gun. I didn't do anything, didn't help her at all. And she shot 10 shots in a matter of like 30 seconds.
Really?
So by using a 22, you're not, if you're doing it with a kid, you're not shocking them with the recoil and the loud noise, and it's cheap. So it's a good way to get the fundamentals and even to practice all your positional shooting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially the scope thing. Like, that's something I really struggle with is, like, trying to watch the impact in my scope. And I noticed, like, when I do that and I focus on that, like, I'm a much better shooter if I can watch the impact in my scope. So I think, like you said, using the 22 and getting the fundamentals down with that would help a lot. That's something I'm definitely going to start doing.
Yeah, for sure. But
so
just
another, oh, go ahead.
No, you're good. What?
Like, this is another thing I was kind of going to ask you, because I feel like there's always like new stuff coming out and, upgrades in technology. Like when you upgrade, say your rifle or even your bow, like what are you doing that like now, or like how late is too late to do that? Like before the season? Or like when are you kind of trying to upgrade if you do upgrade?
Well, it depends on kind of what route you're going. Like if you're going to go like with one of these custom rifle builders, you got to go right now. or you're not going to have your gun in time to practice or even get it for the hunt.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you're buying a factory gun and you can go to the store and pick it up, you need to, like in a, not a 22, but in a center fire rifle, in my opinion, you need to have at least 100 rounds down it to break in the barrel, and get accurate velocities. You're going to get a little bit of copper fouling in the barrel, and your gun's going to start to speed up. So a lot of guys, they'll get a brand new gun from one of these gun builders, and they'll say it's good out to 1,000, and they'll send them a card that shows them they shot it out to 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'll go hunt, or they'll shoot 20, 30 bullets, and it hits all the way out to 1,000. Well, the next year, they go, and everything's high, and they don't understand why. It's because once a gun gets to about 100 rounds, you'll speed up anywhere from 50 to 150 feet a second, generally.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't know that. That's good to know.
So, yeah, I would say you want to have at least 100 rounds down it. Or, like, I've made the mistake before I knew that. I shot, I don't know exactly how many, but I was right on the verge. I shot probably 90 rounds through it. And then I had a client shoot it 5 or 6 times before the hunt. It was good. And then when it came time to shoot the animal, he shot, hit it high, shot it again, hit it in the same spot high. And then I finally figured out that I had to learn that the hard way. But we ended up killing 2 animals with it, but I was able to figure that out in the field and adjust my feet per second without a chronograph.
I see. But it's because you were familiar with your gun and you kind of were able to figure out that was the problem. Yeah, I didn't know that. So that's really good advice. You want to probably get around 100 rounds through it before you take it out to the field, just so that you're not dealing with that in the field. That makes sense.
Exactly. And there's one more thing, if you want me to talk about it, about that kind of falls in line with this.
Of course, yeah.
A little thing. So that was one example of figuring out your feet per second in the field. And you're probably wondering, how did I do that? I didn't have a chronograph. How did I figure that out? I also had another client that showed up with a long-range gun, and he didn't have his feet per second, but whoever hand-loaded his bullets for him was nice enough to leave all the information. And like factory ammo, they'll have it on the box too. But it didn't have his feet per second. Well, he thought he was good out to 1,000, but his scope, this is another important thing. Know if your scope is in mils, minutes, or if it has a custom cut turret. And so the custom cut turret will be for your elevation, and your feet per second. Well, he thought his turret was a custom cut turret, but it was actually an MOA turret. And so he thought 3 MOA was 300 yards.
Right.
So this was the day before the hunt when I figured this out. And so, so literally we were only good to 200 yards with his gun, because it's just guessing. We don't know how fast it's going. So what you can do is, if you have a ballistics calculator on your phone or a Kestrel, what we ended up doing is we made sure that it was good at 100, and then we took it out to five. We shot it out to 500 until we hit. We would dial his turret in MOA until we hit, and then I changed the velocity in my ballistics calculator until it matched up with his turret.
Yup.
And then we went out to 800, and he was a little off at 800 using that velocity. So then we averaged the velocities, and then that gave us everywhere from 1,000 and down.
That makes sense. That's smart to do, though. Yeah.
And he ended up killing his deer at 200 yards, but...
That's perfect. That's how you want it, but at least you're prepared if you have to go further.
Yep. So...
Well,
you have any questions on the NRL 22 stuff or anything we talked about?
Well, I think there's some really good points you made, and I know I learned some stuff just talking to you just now and even before. So the NL 22, is that what it is?
It's NRL 22.
NRL 22. Okay. So is that like are you going to competitions? Is that what that is then?
So the NRL 22 is very relaxed. It just stands for National Rifle League. I do compete in those matches, but it's more of all ages, kids, adults, everybody that wants to do it. They have local matches once a month, let's say. In St. George here, it's the second Saturday of every month, and I think all other states are the same way. But you can become a member. It's like $60 a year to actually compete. But if you want to just go to a match and see how it's done and just practice, it costs $15 a match or something like that, and you'll get to learn from everybody that's there, and it's a really cool atmosphere, and it gets you a lot of time behind the gun in very uncomfortable positions.
That's sweet. I'm going to have to do that. Yeah, I had no idea about that, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
And that probably helps not only like learning your rifle, but like, I always get nervous shooting in front of other people and stuff, so that would probably help a little with, like, buck fever and stuff. Like, making the shot when other people are around, I don't know why, but it makes me nervous, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The competition aspect is not even maybe a competition if you're just there to shoot and have fun. Everyone is there to have fun, but having that pressure is as close to as you can get to having buck fever. It's pretty cool. Like, it's hard. It will help you, like, shooting competitions. I used to get bad target panic with my bow.
Yeah.
And shooting competitions made that go away. But,
yeah. I bet it helps a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. And the one, another thing with the 22 that I was going to say earlier, so long range shooting, everyone wants to shoot or have the capability to shoot long range.
Mm-hmm.
With the rifle. Well, say you're shooting a 6.5 PRC at 1,000 yards. You're going to have to accommodate for wind. You got to make sure you accommodate for wind and your elevation. I don't have my calculator out right now, but let's just say that's 2 mils at 1,000. Like, that's how much you would have to come up. With a 22, 2 mils with a 22 is, like 110 yards. So it really shows your imperfections and makes you have to dial. So, like, in these 22 competitions, you shoot anywhere from 40 yards to 350 yards. And shooting 100-yard shots equivalent to shooting like a 600 or 700-yard shot, the wind will affect it as much with a 22 as it does with a centerfire rifle at those long distances.
Okay, that makes sense. So you're having to still calculate the wind like you would at longer ranges and adjust MOA or mils.
Yeah.
Because even if the difference between shooting 100 and 150 yards with a 22 is gonna, you're gonna have to adjust perfect,
right?
Versus like a,
yeah,
a normal rifle, that's probably like 500 to 700 yards.
Yeah, so like with a 22, it's at 100 yards. Just say you're 2 mils. Well, 150 yards, you're gonna be like 3.5 mils. You look at a rifle, a mil and a half difference in 50 yards, you're out to like, that's equivalent to like a 1,500 yard target for the draw.
Mm-hmm.
So it really shows, that's, in my opinion, that's the best way to practice this time of year and practice with your big guns this time of year, because it simulates the hunting season the best as far as temperature and wind goes.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, that helps a lot. And even just this short little conversation that we had, I learned a ton in it. It gets me kind of realizing that I need to get out and start shooting, because, I mean, just doing those little things can make a big difference. And it just feels so nice once hunting season comes around and you're confident in your weapon and your equipment. You're not second guessing anything, and it's just kind of like you against the deer. You don't have to worry about if your rifle's on or what if this happens or that happens. So that's kind of why we wanted to do this series and just go over some little things that can make big differences and stuff you can do now to prepare for your hunts come this next fall.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, perfect. I appreciate your time, Hunter. We'll have to do a couple more of these. I hope you guys like these little short episodes. Just a little idea Hunter and I had, and I thought that it might help some people, because I learned a lot just having short little conversations with people. I think there's stuff to learn from everyone, and I had no idea about this 22 stuff, but now I want to go get a 22 and start getting familiar with it and just improve my skills wherever I can. So,
hey guys, thanks again for listening to the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'd love to hear your feedback on this mini series. If you guys think it's kind of a cool idea, it's a lot easier to put out more episodes this way. Just a quick 20-minute conversation rather than setting up a whole episode. But we're still going to do the long episodes as well, because those are really popular, and I love listening to big deer stories. So we're not getting rid of those by any means, but just thought this is something we could add. Anyways, I appreciate the support, and don't forget to go get your Dirty Giants hat at dirtygiantspodcast.com. You can get your hat there and then go pick up some big sheds and win one of the prizes. Thanks again.